cars in the driveway. The garage is full of junk. It'll take me a week to clean it, but by then I'll still be drunk. I got the blues. Oh, a home on the blues. Well, man's home is his castle. This one's just a hassle. Home on the blues.
Hello, and thanks for listening to this, the Homeowner's Friend Podcast, the podcast that will help you achieve the American dream and live the best life you can, even on a rice and beans budget. I'm Steve, your host, and coming to you live today in my car from a new headset. Hopefully this sounds a little bit better. It's an awful big improvement over what I had, which was this over-the-ear thing that kept feeling like it was going to fall off. This is a real set of headphones with a boom on it, so it's feels a lot more comfortable. We'll see how the audio quality is when I get home. Hopefully it's as good, if not better, than the last one. Didn't pay much for this, though, so I'm hoping for the best. So anyway, with that, we'll jump into today's topic, which is electricity. We're going to start talking about wiring your new house. But first, in this show, I want to talk a little bit about electrical basics. We covered some of these to some extent in the previous podcast. I think it was way back at the beginning, number two or number three or something like that, when we looked at some of the electrical fundamentals. But that was more on the generating and the transmission side. This show, I want to focus on what happens, you know, on the pole outside your house and from there on into your home and to your outlets and your appliances and all that. So a little bit more local on this particular podcast. And I do think it's important to cover this because you need to kind of have a basic understanding of how the electricity works to be able to work with it and to understand how your circuit breaker boxes are laid out and stuff like that. So it does help to kind of understand what's going on. It'll take away a lot of the mystery. So the first thing I want to do is just kind of explain the differences between AC and DC voltage. And you probably had this back in high school or wherever, but we'll hit it quickly. Basically with DC, it's like in the old days or, you know, in school or whatever, or maybe you do it now, you know, if you work on cars or whatever, but you can put a voltmeter across the battery and it'll read a certain voltage. You put the negative on the positive, it'll read whatever the voltage of the battery is. Like, you know, 12 volts for a car battery or 13 volts or whatever they are. Depends if the car is running or not. So it's going to read, you know, whatever it reads, 13, 13 and a half, 12, 12 and a half, whatever it is. If you were to flip the, the test leads around, you would read a negative voltage of the same amount if you had like a digital meter. If you had an analog meter, the needle would just slam against the peg on the below zero side, but you would know you're on backwards. So that's DC. Basically, the current's always flowing in the same direction, and you know the polarity is always the same, and it's pretty simple. Now AC is a different beast altogether, and that's what we have in our house. AC is alternating current. And what AC is, essentially, if you were to take that battery and connect your voltmeter to it the correct way and read to 9 volts or 12 volts or whatever it is, and then flip the leads around to read the negative 12, and then flip them back to read the positive 12, and then flip around to read the negative 12, if you did that like 60 times in a second, you'd be getting close to what we have for our household voltage, in that it's constantly flipping from a positive to a negative voltage. The difference is that with the battery, you know, it's going from 0 to 9 as soon as you hit the meter on it, and then from 0 to negative 9 when you put the meter on it the other way. The AC waveform coming in from the street is a little bit more gradual than that. It kind of ramps up to the peak and then ramps back down again. But nonetheless, that's essentially what you're doing, is you're flipping that voltage positive and negative, 60 times per second. That's the standard in America. Now over in Europe, I believe it's like 50 hertz. It's a little bit different. So it's stuff that's made here, and it's also 208 or 220 volts over there as well. They just have a whole different electrical grid set up for residential. And stuff that's made to work here you know, may or may not work there. I mean, certainly you'd have to have some kind of adapter for the voltage, but even with the frequencies being different, it could probably mess things up as well. So that's kind of the difference between DC and AC. And coming into our houses, as I said, is AC. Now, in your house, you have 120 volt outlets, and you have some 220 volt appliances. They're typically not outlets. Typically, it would be an appliance at 220 volts, such as perhaps your well pump, your stove, maybe a central air conditioning system, things like that. So you have those two voltages in your house, and again, they're both AC. Now, out at the pole, and what ultimately makes its way into your house is 220 volt AC circuits that are out of phase. Now, let me explain this because it's not real clear. If you were to go down to your basement and read across, open up your breaker box, and I don't recommend you do this until you know what you're doing, but if you were to open up your breaker box, you would notice two black wires coming into it. You would notice one white wire coming into it, in addition to your green grounds, which technically don't come from the street. But I digress. So coming from the street, you'll see white and two black wires. The two black wires are both 120 volt feeds, and the white wire is a neutral. So from a neutral to either of those black wires with an AC voltmeter, you would read 120 volts AC, 60 hertz. So if that's what you have coming into your house, you have 220 volt circuits basically. How do they get 220 volts? Well, pretty simply actually. If you were to hook those two leads up to an oscilloscope, which is a little TV screen that shows you graphically voltage levels, you would see that when you hooked up one of them, you would see that one of the black leads to one of the leads on the oscilloscope, you would see the AC waveform. You would see it, you know, like I say, slowly ramping up to 120 and back to zero, and then back to negative 120 and back to zero in a sinusoidal waveform. I'm sure you've all seen it. It's like the top half of a circle on the left side and the bottom half of a circle on the right side. You know, it's that little shape. Now, if you were to, at the same time, take the other lead of the oscilloscope, because quite often they can show two or three voltage signals at once over each other on the screen, if you were to hook the same, the second voltage probe up to the other white black wire, and again had it connected to the neutral, same neutral, you would see another one of those same 120 volt waveforms. The difference is that the second 120 volt waveform is going to be 180 degrees out of phase of the first one. And what do I mean by that? So they're both going to, at a particular time, they're both going to start at a zero voltage. And at the same time, one of them is going to start ramping up to 120 volts, and the other one is going to start ramping down to 120 volts. So when you get a quarter way through that cycle, so to speak, so you're at the point where one of them's reading 120 volts, it's at the top, and the other one's reading negative 120 volts, that's about a quarter of the way through the cycle, you would be able to measure across those two black lines, because remember, in reference to neutral, one's up 120, one's down 120. If you were to read across those two black lines, you would see 220 volts. That's the difference of the potential between them. Then, of course, the two, the one that's positive ramps back down to zero, and the negative one ramps back up to zero, and you end up having them both at zero again. And then in the next quarter cycle, just the opposite works. The one that was positive before now starts to go negative. The one that was negative starts to go positive. When they both peak out, you again have 120 volts AC. Except now, it's flipped around. If you were measuring it, it would be kind of the opposite polarity. But actually, I take that back. There's no polarity. It's just AC. It's just flipping back and forth. Anyway, that's kind of hard to explain. Scratch that thought. But anyway, you would read 120 volts. So that's how you get 220 volts in a residential home, is that you go across the two black legs and you get your 220 volts, or 120 times two off out of phase. So in your breaker box, or your fuse box, I should say, nobody uses breakers anymore. In your fuse box, if you were to open it up again, you would see, if you had all the breakers out of it, so you could see the back plane of it, you would see at the top, you would see two heavy, you'd see two heavy lugs. I'm in traffic here, folks. You'd see two heavy lugs at the top near the center, and that's where the two black lines would go. There's one on the left and one on the right. And then on the left or on the right, I don't remember which, depends on the panel too, perhaps, you're going to have another big lug, which is going to be where your white wire goes, your neutral wire. And then you're going to see, and that neutral, it's going to have a whole bunch of screw terminals on it, where you can, it's like a bus bar with a bunch of screws in it, and you slide the wire in the bus bar and tighten the screw down on it, and there's going to be a whole bunch of those connections on one side of the panel. On the opposite side of the panel is going to be the ground bus. They usually have a little green paint on it, or the little universal ground symbol, which is like a little vertical line with some horizontal lines starting on the bottom of it going down. They keep getting shorter and shorter. It's supposed to represent the earth and a rod into it. That's the universal ground symbol. So usually they'll have either that or it'll be painted green. And that's how you can tell which is ground. Now, if you look at the way the breakers are wired, there's like in the center of the panel, you'll see a bunch of metal bars sticking up. And you certainly never want to touch those metal bars because they're hot, very hot. They'll send your butt across the room so quick it'll make your head spin. And perhaps your heart stops. So don't ever touch those bars. In fact, anytime you want to do anything in the panel, you should shut it down. Unless you're crazy like me, you should shut it down. Because if you do something wrong, you can really get belted pretty good down there. But anyway, you'll notice all those. Like I say, those bars that stick out, and those are what your breakers attach to get power. The breakers have, on the outside edge, there's usually a little bar that you kind of hook the breaker under to hold it down. And then in the center of the breaker is a little slot that you slide that bar into. Or you slide the slot of the breaker down over the bar, I should say. The bar doesn't move. And that's what gives the breaker its power. It gets it from those center bars that stick out. Now, if you look at those bars, the way they're wired, starting at the top, you'll see that one comes from one side, or one of the black buses, and the next one down will come from the other black bus. They alternate as they go down through the panel. So you'll never have two breakers side by side that are feeding from the same black bus. And there's a reason for that, and I'll explain it in a minute. So basically, when you put a breaker in there, the power is going to come in down your black wire into your panel, and it's going to go down that back plane, and it's going to go into that center bar in the center, and it's going to slide. The power is going to go up into the breaker that is slid over that. It's going to go through the breaker, which is a fuse. It's an overload protecting fuse. And it's going to go out to your circuit, and then it's going to come back on the white line. And the white line you're going to attach to the bus bar on, it's either on the left or the right, depending on the panel. Again, the one that's attached to your white common wire. And that's kind of like the other lead of your power. Also, on all your Romexes or whatever kind of wire you're going to use, you're going to have a ground. And the ground's going to connect it to the green bus. And we'll talk a bit about the how all that's wired here in a minute. So that's basically how a 120 volt circuit works. Now, if you just start populating the breakers from the top of the panel down, like most people would do, you know, put one on the left, one on the right, or even if you did all the ones on the left first, it doesn't really matter. Your load in your house is going to be somewhat balanced across the two black lines because of this alternating arrangement. So, like say, if they had all the blacks from one wire on one side and all the other ones on the other side, it would be pretty possible to have an uneven load. But because of the way they're alternating like that, it's kind of level or even. You know, you have some circuits on one black line and some circuits on the other black line, all of course going back to that common white wire. If you look at all the, you know, even if yours is off a little bit, if you're pulling a little bit more from one side or the other, if you look overall at the average of all the houses in your neighborhood and certainly across the whole power grid, it's going to be pretty evenly distributed because, you know, people just randomly grab one, you know, they're either randomly grabbed connecting into one or the other leg, and just the law of averages will kind of keep that more or less even as far as the way that the load is balanced. So it's kind of neat that you actually have basically 220 volt feeds coming into your house. So that current, which is most of what you're going to use, is actually divided between the two wires. So that's kind of a neat feature. Now, being that they're side by side, is also how they get 220 volts out of your panel. If you look at a 220 volt breaker, and there is a difference between 110 volt and 220 volt breaker, in that the 220 volt breaker is a double breaker. It actually has two breakers in one box. They're like attached together, so to speak. They're like twice the size of a single breaker. So when you go ahead and drop that in your panel, it's going to hook underneath the outside edge just like the other ones. It's going to snap on over the center. It's going to slide over the center bars just like the 120 volt ones, except that you're attaching you're attaching to two of them side by side. And remember what I said, that two side by side are always going to come from different black wires. So you can go ahead and measure across those two screw terminals of that 220 volt breaker, and you're essentially measuring across the two black wires. So you will have your 220 volt line for your 220 volt device, whatever it is. So that's how they get 220. They just have double breakers. The two breakers are actually tied together, so if one leg or the other is pulling too much current, it'll trip the whole circuit and shut the whole thing down. Obviously, if only one side tripped, it would be dangerous because you would still have half the voltage going to the unit, and that could overheat the motor or draw too much current or whatever. It would cause problems. So they have them tied together, so if one side gets screwed up, the other one trips as well to protect everything. So that's important to know. So that's how you get 220, basically. Now, you'll also notice that there's some double breakers available. I don't know, I call them cheater breakers. They're two breakers, but they work off in one pole or one of the bars, and they're used for panels that are just full, and they're the size of a standard breaker, but they'll have two breakers in them, and you'll notice because they're exactly the same width as a standard full-size breaker. And you want to stay away from those if you can, because you're putting twice as much current on that bar that comes up, which isn't too good. And I mean, they're perfectly safe, but it's just not as good as having enough full-size breakers to begin with. You know, you're putting twice as much current on that bar. However, if you have no more branches available, it is more safe than starting to double and triple stuff up, and you won't have as many trip breakers and things. So, you know, they do have those, but don't get those confused with a 220 volt breaker, because that you'll only get 110 volt out of it. Both of those breakers are attached to the same lug and thus the same black wire, so you'll only get 120 volts out of it no matter what you do. So, how does the power get into the house? We'll talk about this briefly. Basically, there's like three ways that you're going to get power into your house, three possible ways, or combinations thereof. You're going to go overhead, underground, or through some other system. Other system could be solar or something. You're not even tied to the grid. We're not going to talk about that today. But going overground, obviously the wires are strung from the telephone pole to your house or to a pole near your house or something like that, and that's how the power gets to your house. And usually your cable and phone do the same thing. They also have as another option, you can have underground service where the power comes in through some conduits underground, and it's certainly the best way to go, because A, your lines are out of sight and you don't have to look at them and stuff. And but even more importantly is that they're safe under there. There's you know, if a tree lands on an underground service, it's not going to hurt it because it's underground. If a tree lands on your electrical lines coming from the street to your house, you're going to lose power because the weight of the tree will break the lines and they'll go down and you'll be out of power until all that mess gets cleaned up and the power company comes and rehooks you back up again. But overhead is much cheaper and much more easy to do if you can do it, if you're close enough to the road and you can do it. Although usually you can do it with some poles, but you know, you can decide by the cost of how you want to handle it. Now, how this typically works, at the pole, and this is in either case, at the pole, if you look at your average residential power pole in front of your house, you're going to see two wires at the very top on the top of the T. And those two lines are essentially the two phases, or the two black lines come into your house. That's essentially those two lines, except that they're at a much higher voltage. And they do that, again, to keep current down on the lines. And we talked about all that. You can go back to podcast number two. I'm not going to get into that again. But it's at a very much higher voltage. And then you'll see, every so often, you'll see a little round cylindrical box attached to the pole. And that's a transformer. Sometimes, if your power happens to be underground, you won't see any of this. But you'll see the little blue boxes, or whatever color they are, green, which is where the transformers are. But let's talk about overhead, because that's how it is in most areas of the country these days. Except in some subdivisions, which are probably already built. So you'll see the pole jock there, the transformer hanging off the pole. And again, going into it, you will see the two lines from the top. And there's another third line that runs down the pole, which is the neutral, and that's attached to it as well, I believe. And then going out of the transformer will be a couple more wires, and they're attached to three wires that usually run down the poles just under the two ones on the top. So they'll be on the main part of the pole, down a little bit lower, and there's usually three of them. They're like, you know, 8 inches or a foot apart or something like that, or 6 inches apart. Those are exactly what goes into your house. Those are the 120 volt plus and minus or AC lines that are, you know, out of phase that go into your house. And when you have, the traffic on the other side of the highway here is completely stopped. I mean, they're in park, so there must be a pretty bad accident up there or something. I'm glad it's that side and not this side. But I do get in those every now and then. Oh yeah, people are outside. It must be real bad. Poor folks. Hate when that happens. So annoying. Especially if you're the one that got in the accident and caused it. So anyway. So what they do for an overhead line, I mean, the first thing when you're going to hook up a service to your house, you want to contact the power company. Because usually what they'll do is they'll send out one of their engineers or technician guy or somebody who knows what's going on. And he'll come out to your house and he'll size up your installation, where your house is going. He'll look at where his poles are and this and that. And he knows what he can do and what he can't do, or what they can do and what they can't do. And he will go ahead and talk with you and come up with a plan as far as how you want to install your power. And they will, wow, this traffic's still backed up like a mile, 2 miles. They're going to be there for a while. Poor folks. They're going to work with you to figure out the best way to install that power. So they're going to tell you where to put, where's the best place for you to do the drop on your house, and where you should put your meter, and the heights of all that stuff and everything. They'll run through that all with you. And what you'll have to do, you're going to have to, in most areas, you're going to have to pull a building permit to do anything with this. Because I know in Connecticut how it works is there's a, when you pull a building permit form, a CRS number is attached to it, which is a customer repair service order or something like that. And the power company gives that number out, and it's associated with your name and your address and whatnot. And so you go ahead and wire up your all the stuff that you're supposed to wire up, and then you have it inspected, and then the building official calls in to the power company and mentions your CRS number and your name and stuff, and tells them that everything has been inspected and is safe for installation. And then the power company will come out and install the power. They will not come out to your property until they have that CRS number cleared. So that's why you have to get permits before you do anything with your service, where the power company has to come out and connect. So the first thing you want to do is, you know, talk with the power company and also talk with the building official to make sure that you get all that straightened out. But once you know where everything's going to go, you have to do your part first, and then the power company will come do their part second. Now, what's your part? You have to install everything from, they call the weather head, down and into your panel. So you're going to have to install, typically the first thing you're going to install is the meter socket on the side of your house. And the meter socket is a little metal box that's got a round hole in it and some connections in there where the power company will connect the meter. Now, there's different brands of meters and stuff, but the meter sockets are all standard. So you'll just go buy a generic meter socket, you'll mount it on the side of your house, and then you'll go ahead and attach your wiring to it, and then the power company will come and put the meter in for you and activate your service. Now, what are the other elements of this? So you mount the meter socket, and then coming from the meter socket up for an overhead install, which is what we're talking about first, you'll have to have a piece of wire coming from the meter socket up the side of your house, up to a height that is what was recommended by the power company. And usually it's 12 or maybe 14 feet up, something like that. It's got to be high enough so the wires leaving your house are high enough so that nobody could ever touch them or get caught in them with a car or something like that. So they've got to be a bit up in the air. And if it's got to go across the road, you know, it's got to be high enough for that as well. So you'll run the wire up the side of the house, you know, tacking it along the way. Now most folks for new installs, they'll just use service wire, which is designed just for that purpose. It's got a very heavy gray sheath on it. It's kind of an oval shaped cable, so it doesn't stick out as far from the side of the house. And basically what's in it is two big heavy cables, which is your two black wires. And then there's a sheath around it, a shield, so to speak, of also very heavy cable, kind of woven around it. And that's actually your neutral. That acts as your neutral, but it also helps protect the inner wires. And neutral is the same as ground, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but it's basically the same as ground. So if, you know, if somehow, you know, the nails or something that you have holding, you know, the clamps that you have holding this on your house wears through the insulation or something, it would just hit that outer sheath and it wouldn't cause any problems because it's essentially a neutral or a ground. It's not hot, so it won't, you know, burn your house down or whatever. So it's well thought out. You can also run conduit, and you can run individual wires in the conduit as well. Most folks run that service wire, and that's an aluminum cable. And it's aluminum because it's cheap. It's cheaper than copper. So, and it's got to be so big to handle such high current that usually folks use aluminum. It's just a little bit cheaper than the copper. So you'll go buy that the proper service wire, and you have to get the proper size depending on the length you're going. And that's usually not an issue. Length usually isn't an issue with an overhead service. Although it could be. You might have to run this stuff along, you know, the eaves of your house for some distance before you get to where the power company's going to connect. You know, I don't know, but for the most part, usually distance isn't a factor, but amperage certainly is. If you have a 200 amp service, you're going to need cable that's sizably larger than that for a 100 amp service. So when you go buy it, you want to buy the proper cable. You can just ask, and usually I think it's 2 watts good for 200. I forget the gauges now. It's been like a year since I did mine, and I don't do it every day, so I just kind of forget. But everybody knows it at the electrical stores. Say, I need cable for a 200 amp or 100 amp service or whatever, and they'll give it to you. So you're going to go ahead and run that up the side of your house, and you're going to fasten it to the house with some specially made large cable nails that are for the cable. And then once you get up to the height that it needs to be, you're going to cut this cable long. Don't cut it so it just goes to that height. You want to cut it so it's like 2 feet longer than the height. So if it's got to go up 12 feet, you'll go up 12 feet, and there better be about 2 more feet of cable beyond that. So what you're going to do is you're going to go ahead and strip the wire back. So again, it's long enough to get from your you're going to have to strip both ends of it. You're going to have to strip about 8 inches off, or maybe a little bit more off one end to attach it into the meter socket. And the other end, you're going to want to strip it quite a bit longer to leave the pigtails for the power company to attach to. Now, let me just talk about that a little bit. At the very top of that line, where you have it stripped, you're going to install what is known as a weatherhead. And a weatherhead is a little plastic fitting, so to speak, that fits over the cable. And it's cable specific, depending on the cable you have. And it fits over the cable, and so the cable, it fits over the stripped end of the cable, and it has two holes kind of in the front of it, where your wires will come out. But they're going to come out basically facing down. So the wire goes up, and then it makes an abrupt turn downward. And the weather head keeps rain from getting down on top of that stripped area where you've stripped the cable and running down inside the cables and into your electrical meter socket and inside of your breaker box, which would be a bad thing. You don't want water in there. It causes corrosion and fires eventually. So that's what the weather head is for, and it allows you to have the cables coming out facing downward. And then you need to have them about 2 or even 3 feet long, because they're going to go down a bit and then loop, and the power company's going to loop them back up again, and they're going to attach a heavy insulator to your house, and they're going to attach their cable to that insulator. This is another cable that they usually run, that the electric carrying cables are attached to, and then they'll go ahead and attach those electric carrying cables to your cables. And allow a nice loop, so any water going down the cables is going to fall off the bottom of the loop. So even off the bottom of the weatherhead, the water hitting the cables is just going to run down because it's facing down. And the cables then loop around and start heading back up to attach to the power company cables. So even that water is going to go down the loop and just drip off the bottom. It's called the drip loop. So they do that. Now, when you strip the end of the cable, you're going to notice as soon as you strip it, and strip it carefully. You don't want to nick the wires. Most of the current actually flows on the surface of the wires, believe it or not. And if you nick it, you screw that up, and you can actually make a hot point on the cable when you start pushing them on current. So don't nick the wire. Make sure you just cut the insulation. Be very careful. Use a nice sharp, what I did is I used a nice sharp utility knife. And I just cut it a little bit till I'm not even quite through the insulation. You bend it a bit and the insulation will break where you've cut it a little bit. And that's kind of how I did it. And you don't actually cut all the way through. You just want to be very careful. And when you cut that gray insulation off, it's going to reveal this, and of course you strip it back, it's going to reveal this woven outer layer of that heavy cable that's your neutral. So you want to unweave that, so you just have a bunch of random wires coming off, combed, nice and straight, random wires coming off the wire at the point where it's stripped. And then you're going to take all those wires and you're going to slowly wrap them all together, nice and neatly, to essentially create a third wire out of them. And that's going to become your neutral, and that's what you're going to attach. The power company will attach their neutral to it, and you're going to attach it to the neutral lugs of your both your meter box and of the circuit breaker box. So that's how you do the top end, the weather head. And again, the power company will come and connect it, and they'll water seal up the ends and do whatever they need to do. You don't need to worry about that anymore. So down at the meter box, when you have the cover off the meter box, which you can do. After they put the meter in, they're going to lock that. You're not ever going to be able to get in there again. So take a good look at it and whatnot, because you're not going to be seeing the inside of that box again for a long time, hopefully. So because they don't want you going in there and stealing power. So if you look inside the meter box, you're going to see, you're going to see the receptacles for the meter, and you're going to see that there's basically three connections there on the top and three on the bottom. And the two on the outer edge are going to be for your two hots, your two black lines. And there's one in the middle, which is going to be your neutral, which is your white wire. I believe the white wire goes through the meter. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I believe they all go through the meter. Well, in any case, I know the two outer ones are going to be black, and the other one's going to be where the white wires are going to go. So you're going to connect those to the top three lugs of the some lady's beeping at somebody for like driving safely. You know, we can't do that. She's in a little sports car and wants to do 90. So anyway, you're going to attach that. You're going to attach the lines from the part I'm in traffic here. It's crazy people driving here. Attach the lines from your weather head to the top side of those top three lugs in your meter socket. The bottom three lugs you're going to attach to another piece of cable. Again, you're going to strip each about a foot off each end and put it in the box. That wire is going to go down into your basement and into your breaker box. Now, you're going to need to buy for the top of the meter box where your cable goes in to go up to the weather head. You're going to need to buy a weatherproof fitting there for that wire to go through, and they sell them just for that purpose. It's a weatherproof fitting. It's got some little gaskets in there and stuff, and you run the wire through and you tighten the bolt down and it squeezes the gaskets on the bolt, and it supposedly keeps water from leaking into the box. I don't trust it, and no electrician ever does. So you want to go ahead, and they also sell this like brick of putty at the electrical supply houses. I recommend you get a brick of it because you can use it for other things. And it's like a putty, and it's gray, and you just kind of mold it over the top of that whole fixture, right up tight against the wire, the cable, and then all around the fitting, and it'll keep the water from even getting to the fitting, that weather tight bushing is what it is, actually, is the word I was looking for. And so use that goop there, that putty, and you can use that putty around other openings, like where your air conditioning cables pipes come in, or perhaps even if you have a hose connection or something, you could put it around anything like that to help. It's a great thing for sealing. It stays soft, and it just keeps weather out. It's really great. You could use it around dryer vents, anything. It's just pretty nice stuff to have. So I would go ahead and get a brick of it. It's only a few bucks, and it lasts a long time. You just keep it in a bag. It doesn't really dry up. You'll be able to use it again in the future. So and then on the bottom you'll use another one of those fittings, but it's not so important because it's at the bottom and water's not going to leak into it anyway. And you'll have to drill a big old hole in the side of the house and run your cable in to the house. And in your basement, of course, you're going to have to mount your circuit breaker box on the wall. And again, I recommend mounting a piece of like half inch or 3/4 inch plywood on a couple 2x that are either screwed or ram set it or something into the concrete or whatever you have for the wall material. If you have a finished basement, you can just put it between a couple studs. They usually fit that way. And just make sure it's mounted firmly. And if you do put plywood, it's good to put another one of those 2x right underneath the center of where the panel's going to be, because when you're pounding on that wood to put in all the little staples that you got to pound in to hold all your wires, it's nice to have that board under there to keep the board from bouncing. Because trust me, if you don't put one, that the board's going to be bouncing, it's tough to get the staples in. So go ahead and make sure it's fastened well, and with extra support behind it, so it's not wiggly. So go ahead and mount the panel at a nice, comfortable height for you to work. So, probably the middle of it maybe at about 5 feet. So it goes up to like 7 and down to, 4 or something like that. And go ahead and connect the power up to the top. Now, inside the panel, you're going to see on the top, typically, you're going to see two huge lugs for your two blacks. And then off to one side is going to be another big lug, which is going to be for your white. So you go ahead and connect those wires. These wires are very big and very thick and very hard to bend. So it's good to have a big pair of pliers, and you might even want to wrap some electrical tape or something around the end of the pliers, so when you put them on the cables and try and bend them, you're not going to be damaging the cables and the insulation. It's something I did because usually pliers have some pretty sharp teeth on them, and that'll just raise heck with the insulation. So if you just wrap some electrical tape around it, kind of cushion it. You could even put a little piece of cardboard and then wrap the tape around it or something, just so it's not, you can still squeeze down on it pretty good, but just so you're not able to rip the insulation, which you don't want to do. And also another tip, when you're buying a panel and or a meter box, some of them have the lugs where the front of the lug actually comes off. And typically what it is you unscrew the screw all the way, and then you can usually unhook, and it unhinges the top of the lug. So when you're looking at the lug that way, all you see are the sides and the bottom of the lug. The top is totally open. And it makes life a lot easier for putting in the conductors. Because otherwise you've got to kind of bend the conductors back away from the lug, put them underneath the lug, and then bend them back flat again to get them to go into the lug. And it's a pain in the neck. If it's an open deal, you just kind of bend it down onto it. You don't have to do that intermediate bend to try and get it up and then back down in, if you can understand what I'm saying. So what one of my, I think my meter socket had those, and I think the circuit breaker box did not. And trust me, I swear, I think I had a GE box, the GE circuit breaker box, and it did not have that. And trust me, I called GE a few things that day. So if you can find them that have those, it's going to make your life a lot easier, especially if you're putting a 200 amp service in. Because again, that cable doesn't bend very easily. So you go ahead and connect the two blacks and the whites. And again, it's heavy cable. It's hard to use. You got to get the proper bushing for the top of the panel too for that cable, because it takes a very large bushing, which you know is what you attach it to the top of the panel in the big knockout. The knockouts are usually like a series of rings, and you want to start you want to put the bushing on top of the rings, and you can see roughly to what bushing you've got to knock out to get a hole big enough for your for that particular bushing to fit in there and to be able to screw down. And you put the bushings in with the screw connectors that you screw down onto the wire on the top of the panel, and the big nut that holds the bushing in always goes on the inside of the panel. So you go ahead and mount those, and then run your wires through them. The bushing should always be on the gray insulation. Don't strip the wire back so far that you're clamping down on the two blacks in the white, in this case there's no white, it's actually the sheath. You don't want to be clamping down on that. You always want to be clamping down on the gray outside insulating sheath. So just make sure you do that on all of these bushings. So go ahead and connect all that up. And then the next thing you got to do is you got to connect your grounds. Now, I believe the electrical code in most areas now, and it may vary depending on where you are, but I think the electrical code in most areas, certainly up here, calls for 2 8-foot electrical ground rods for a new service like that. So you're going to go ahead and drive one of these ground rods a few feet out from your foundation, kind of near where your service entrance is. So you go ahead and drive one, and then drive a second one like 5 or 8 feet away. And if you have an area that's more damp, then, you know, like maybe there's an area where it's a little bit low or it puddles a lot, that's actually a very good place to put your ground rods, because you want them, because if they're damp, they have a better conductivity than if they're dry. So if you have a spot, you know, that's a little bit wet a few feet out from the house, and you can put the rod there, go right ahead and do it. Then you're gonna wanna buy the heavy copper grounding wire. It's used for grounding. It's a braided wire that it doesn't have any insulation on it. It's just a heavy braided copper wire. It's like 1 gauge or something. And you want to buy enough of that to get from your panel out and through your two rods. Now what you do is you run, the rods have a clamp on them, and you're going to run the wire through the first clamp. You're not going to cut the wire. You run the wire through the first clamp. So the clamp is essentially, you know, in the middle of the wire somewhere. And you're going to have the wire continue on to the second rod. And that the wire should end at that second rod. And you can put more than two rods in. The more you put, the better your ground. And, you know, there's no, you could put 3 or 4 of them in if you wanted to. And if you're in a really dry area, that's not a bad idea. Because, again, if the ground is really dry, like you're in a desert or something, you want to have more probably than less. Again, it depends on the soil types and stuff. But, you know, check with your local officials how they want that done. So the wire is going to end at the furthest away ground rod, and then it's going to travel through the closer ground rod and into the house, and it's going to get attached to that big ground bus that's inside the panel. And typically there's a special green screw that you need to drive in, that you need to screw in, that actually it attaches that bus to the actual case or the cabinet of the breaker box. It's called bonding. So you want to go ahead and put those screws in. Don't lose them. Additionally, for ground, if you have city water, you're going to want to ground to your city water line as well, which is a really awesome ground, because you got a piece of copper pipe going out into the ground for, you know, miles through the ground. So it's a really wonderful ground. So you want to use that as well. So run another wire from your breaker box out and over to your meter. Well, to your water line, one of the water lines in your house. Usually you run it over to where your meter is. But you know, you can actually attach it anywhere, because the pipe is a very good ground. The only thing is, at the meter where you have a water meter, you have to jump it. You have to put on either side of that meter socket, you've got to put a big old clamp and a piece of that wire, because the meter, in many cases, is an electrical insulator, so it won't allow your ground to function through the meter. So just go ahead and now, there we are. I'm back. We had a slight battery failure there. Happens every now and then. So I had to wait to get home to finish, as I'm home now. That's why the audio sounds a little different. I'm not in my car. I don't have to scream into the microphone. So as I said, you want to put a jumper across your meter, because meters are often not good conductors of electricity, so you end up having it open across them. So you want to jump that, and that will provide a second and a very good path to ground for your new panel. So that's pretty much what I wanted to cover in this segment. What we're going to talk about in the next segment is how to start wiring some of the circuits, and the sizes you ought to use and the number you ought to use and all that kind of stuff. Electrical gets a little complicated as far as what you should and shouldn't do. But again, it's not that difficult, and we'll try and get you through it. So with that, we'll let you go. And again, thanks for listening to this, the Homeowner's Friend Podcast, the podcast that will help you achieve the American dream and live the best life you can, even on a racing beast. Take care, folks. Thanks a lot. Oh, home on the blues. Well, man's home is his castle. This one's just a hassle. Home on the blues.